quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples and the Squamish-speaking peoples. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded territories of the Halkomelem-speaking peoples and the Hunkaminam-speaking peoples. And at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. I'm Leslie, and today's episode of Typically Tuesdays is about heinous loser J.K. Rowling. And that's it. I know it sounds kind of harsh, it sounds kind of mean, but I don't like her. I don't like her because she is an incredibly transphobic bigot. I don't like her because she is, like, just ridiculously uninformed, disinformed, ignorant, and frankly, I don't like using this word, but frankly, stupid about sexuality and queerness. And I don't like her because I don't think that she is actually a feminist. And I wouldn't have any trouble if she weren't a feminist, but she is convinced that she is. And it scares me that she does. And today's show might make you uncomfortable, but I am going to be essentially talking about why maybe you should consider dropping Harry Potter from your bookshelf and not gifting it to people in your life and not playing the video game. Just like completely consider why you should emotionally and financially divest from Harry Potter and that franchise. And because I'm going to be talking about heinous loser J.K. Rowling, in the words of the magical Pedro Pascal, I'm also going to be talking about transphobia, specifically transmisogyny. In several instances, I'm going to be talking about the UK ruling on the supposed definition of women. I'm going to be talking about queerphobia, specifically acephobia, so discrimination against asexual people, and also oppression against asexual people. And I am going to be talking about misogyny and also mentioning gender-based violence. If any of that is something that you don't want to listen to, I welcome you to join me again next week on Typically Tuesdays, where we're going to be talking about things that are more positive. But that's not going to be the episode today. It's going to be critical. It's going to be kind of harsh. It's going to be dunked in reality, and it's gonna hope I'm gonna try to give it some levity in tone at some points, but it is going to be an intense episode. So take care of yourself, and if you're ready and strapped in, let's start off with today's playlist, which is an anti J.K. Rowling pro trans playlist. We're going to start off with the Nosebleeds with Fascist Pigs. Oh yeah, this episode, also the playlist, it's really not subtle. Enjoy!
Pigs. Is Bird Note. You might think the first bird species that humans raised in captivity would be a relatively small one, like a chicken. But evidence suggests that people in New Guinea reared the cassowary, often called the world's deadliest bird, as much as 18,000 years ago, long before the domestication of chickens. The remains of cassowary eggs and bones at archaeological sites in New Guinea indicate that people gathered the eggs, possibly allowing the more mature eggs to hatch into chicks. All cassowaries possess fearsome, sharp toes that have been known to kill or seriously injure humans. While northern and southern cassowaries can reach heights of 5 feet or more, the dwarf cassowary stands just 3.5 feet tall. Researchers suspect that by collecting nearly hatched cassowary eggs, probably from the dwarf cassowary, people could have easily reared their chicks. Today in New Guinea, captive cassowary chicks become imprinted on their human carers, allowing people to raise them to adulthood. Cassowaries may not be the cuddliest of birds, but people found a clever way to live beside them long ago. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. Want more Bird Note sounds, images, and stories delivered straight to your inbox? Subscribe to our weekly newsletter for a preview of the week's shows, stories, and stunning photos every Friday morning. Visit birdnote.org to sign up today.
Thank you. it's true. You picked it right up. You played it.
To Typically Tuesdays. My name is Leslie, and you just heard Cole Pulis featuring the voice of Hunter Schafer on a track off of the Transa album. The track was called Under the Shadow of Another Moon, Dark Night. Before that, we started the show off today with a track by the Nosebleeds called Fascist Pigs. And today I'm going to be talking about another fascist pig, who is J.K. Rowling. Now, the reason why I guess I wanted to tackle this topic of, like, transphobia and general bigotry by talking about J.K. Rowling and the Harry Potter franchise is because I felt like that was a good starting place. I realize that there are not a lot of people that have any clue about what's happening with J.K. Rowling these days, and they assume that she continues to be the beloved children's book author of the Harry Potter series. But let me just share a little bit of news. As you may or may not know, the Supreme Court, the UK Supreme Court, recently ruled that trans women do not fall within the legal definition of women under the country's equality legislation. And this is information pulled right out of a New York Times article by Lizzie Dearden called UK Top Court Says Trans Women are not legally women under Equality Act. So continuing on with this article, quote, the landmark judgment which said that the legal definition of a woman is based on biological sex and is a blow to campaigners for transgender rights. It could have far-reaching consequences on the operation of single-sex services like domestic violence shelters, as well as equal pay claims. And it comes amidst an intense public debate over the intersection of transgender rights and women's rights, end quote. And so this is a little bit of like a, wait, what does this have to do with J.K. Rowling, right? Like, Leslie, this is general, like, legislative transphobia. Are we not seeing this happening in the States? Are we not seeing, like, people trying to make that happen in Canada as well? I'm pretty sure this isn't all that new, Leslie. Like, I keep up with the news. Yeah, you're right. It might not be all that new. And in fact, it might be a long time coming, as we've discussed many times on this show before. You know, we are in the pit of hell of fascism right now in the world. But one of the reasons why it is of a concern is because one of the most influential writers in the world, aka, in this case, J.K. Rowling, has been a strong proponent of anti-trans advocacy and activism for several years now. If you are not a frequent user on the internet, you have been spared, essentially, of knowing this information. If you, like me, however, grew up on Twitter, then you would know that beginning a few years ago, J.K. Rowling began to use her social media to essentially constantly cut down the experiences of oppression by transgender people. Oftentimes, usually, her victims were transgender women, but many times as well, they were about non-binary people and also transgender men. She became this like huge proponent of anti-trans rhetoric, constantly in the very beginning, just simply alluding to the possibility and idea that cisgender women who were trans-exclusionary feminists were being oppressed by these over-concerned, confused transgender people who didn't respect cisgender women. Later on, it became more apparent and more clear that she actually had a huge problem with transgender people in general. She started hanging out with actual self-identified anti-trans activists, people who were proponents of the anti-gender ideology groups, also hanging out with the actual self-identified fascists. So it became, you know, of a concern. After the UK Supreme Court's ruling that I mentioned earlier, J.K. Rowling legitimately, she didn't have to do this, but she did begin to openly celebrate the new legal definition of what constitutes a woman in the UK. She tweeted a photo of her holding a glass of wine, hanging out on some boat somewhere, and smoking a cigarette with the caption, "I love it when a plan comes together." You might be thinking, Leslie, that's just a coincidence. And I think you would be wrong. Personally, I think you're wrong. Because she, J.K. Rowling has, since she began showing her anti-trans beliefs, has been the subject of, like, countless, I am talking countless, podcasts, video essays, web show docuseries, etc., about her personal political beliefs. People are defending her for having these pretty transphobic views. Some people are not defending her. Obviously, they are condemning her. But really importantly, what's to note is that whenever she is called out for her bigotry, J.K. Rowling doubles down. She began to double down so hard, in fact, that nobody would even have to tweet at her. Nobody would even have to you know, make any single blog post, internet post, anything like that about her, or even necessarily about transgender people in general, but she would find those posts and repost them, and she would be like, you said that you support inclusive spaces. Well, have you ever considered how some of these people are a threat to women, and very specifically biological women? And it's like, Joanne, nobody was talking to you. What are you doing? And I want to say, one of the huge reasons why I really, like, do not feel, personally, from what I have observed, what I have seen from Joanne, I do not feel that she is what she claims to be, which is that she is a supporter of women's rights, that she is a feminist. I feel that she isn't, because her brand of feminism really specifically is very restrictive. It is bio-essentialist, gender-essentialist view of what a woman is and what a woman does. Even though she might claim, women can do anything, we can do anything we want, you know, we're going out there, we're earning our corn, we're earning our coin, and we're trying to be independent, you know, don't restrict us, that's misogyny. The sentiments agreed. The method, big disagree. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that after this music break. Here is more music on this playlist in which we are saying, J.K. Rowling, you have some very questionable views that I don't agree with, and I'm condemning them right now. Here is Coming Down by Icon, Jackie Shane. Enjoy.
I'm coming down, 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 coming down with a heartache. I ain't sick, but I got a fever. Blood pressure's running high. Pulse ain't right, I can't sleep at night. And here's the reason why. Can diagnose
bird note. Birds' eggs are among nature's most elegant creations, but they're not easy to make. This American robin will lay one egg per day for 3 to 4 days. To make her eggs, the female robin has to use a great deal of calcium. But she can't just pour herself a nice big glass of milk. She has to find her calcium in nature. And it can be tough to find enough. But we can help. During the nesting season, we can give the birds that visit our homes some of that crucial calcium. Start off by putting calcium-enriched seed and suet in your bird feeders. For the many species that don't eat seed or suet, like robins, you can give them leftover chicken eggshells instead. Rinse the shells off in the sink, spread them out on a cookie sheet, and bake them in the oven at about 250 degrees for 10 minutes. You just want the shells to dry, not brown. When you're done, crush them up. Crushed eggshells can be mixed with bird seed and set out in a feeding tray or scattered right on the open ground. And remember, always wash your hands after handling raw eggs. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day. And you can get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram, at Bird Note Radio.
Kitchen by Jasmine Forti off of her debut record, You Are the Morning, here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I don't like J.K. Rowling. I've said it before, I'll say it again, and my name is Leslie. I'm your host for this hour of community radio. And I personally feel that you should not continue to enjoy Harry Potter, or at least distribute Harry Potter, if you are a person who continues to distribute Harry Potter and you insist, however, that you are a supporter of women, trans rights, queer people, let's just go with the very basic. If you support women, if you claim to love women, but you are out here lending your Harry Potter books to the young people in your family, or you are trying to get access to play a new Harry Potter video game, and you claim that you are a feminist, I strongly implore you to not do those things. And consider what type of feminist you really want to be. J.K. Rowling, as discussed earlier, is a huge transphobe. But her bigotry and her weird, non-inclusive feminism does not extend only to trans exclusion. It also extends to many other people, including other queer people. A few weeks ago, it was Asexual Visibility Week, and J.K. Rowling, nobody asked her. Nobody asked her, okay? No one asked her. Nobody cares. But she felt that it was very important to make the tweet in which she says, and I quote, "How do asexual people know whether they're gay or straight, I wonder?" I mean, sure, I guess some people who might not be very familiar with ace people and who actually may not have a very broad or complex understanding of sexuality might legitimately feel that way. They might legitimately think that. And it's because of ignorance. But listen to this. She also wrote, quote, "Happy International Fake Oppression Day to everyone who wants complete strangers to know that they don't," and I'm going to use daytime radio-friendly language here, "don't want to engage in a sexual relationship." Okay. Let me break it down for you. Asexual people actually are truly an oppressed minority. And a lot of people don't have, truly, they don't have a lot of familiarity with asexual people and their experiences, largely because this is a newer kind of definition that people, or a newer kind of identity or label that people of a very particular type of sexual orientation experience are using more often these days. In the past, yes, maybe people who didn't really experience sexual attraction or experienced a lack of sexual attraction may not have used this term to label their experiences, but now there are more people who are using it and identifying with it, and that is not at all a bad thing. But asexual people do still experience oppression at the hands of the state, and actually very often in the medical system. In fact, there is still also a lot of discrimination against asexual people. There are a lot of people who genuinely believe that asexual people can be cured because they are simply experiencing something physiological. And there are people who also believe that asexuality is very similar to how people used to think of homosexuality as being a mental health disorder. The list of ways in which asexual people are discriminated against and oppressed can go on and on. I know in my life, I have met asexual women whose lives would have looked completely different if there were supports for asexual people back when they were younger. Instead, they were pressured by society to get married and settle down, and they didn't have much of a choice to even engage with the idea of marriage. They just had to, because otherwise they would not be able to have certain socioeconomic resources. When I think about that intersection between gender and sexuality, it reminds me of why I really don't think that J.K. Rowling is a feminist. Because if it is the case that J.K. Rowling based a lot of her feminist activities on discussions around violence against women and how women are subjugated through violence, through violent misogynist acts, through even gender-based violence. Why is her view of violence not broader? Why is it not concerning not only interpersonal violence that, as I understand, she has based a lot of her own personal experiences on, and that's where she creates her ideas of feminism from, but rather she is not more also concerned with the violence of the state and the violence of legislative systems or the violence of the medical system or even social and cultural pressures. I think if she were a real feminist, she would consider all of those things, right? Because it wasn't too long ago that, you know, you really did have to get married and have children in order to be a woman that had resources, right? I mean, the people who I was talking about just a few moments ago, they were growing up in the 60s and the 70s, and in many places in the world right now, including even in the West, that is still the case for some people, right? If J.K. Rowling were actually concerned about the well-being of women, about women's rights, she were really actually concerned about quashing misogyny, then she would not have such narrow, bio-essentialist, frankly, in my opinion, gender-essentialist understandings of gender and sexuality. In fact, they would be much broader, they would be much deeper, they would be intersectional and way more well-informed. But I'll talk a little bit about why that's not the case and why that's the problem after this music break. Here is Sophie with a track called Just Like We Never Said Goodbye. Hope you enjoy it.
We were young and out of control. I hadn't seen you since I was about 16 years old. But then you called me up the other day. I was shocked, but what could I say? And your voice exactly the same. And it makes me feel, oh, just like you never said goodbye when you spoke to me. Makes me feel
who takes things a little too far, presses a little too hard. That's why you left a mark, and I'm the kind of girl who wants everything she can't get, leaving alone and yet somehow still leaving a mess. But I'm a girl who's learning everything I say isn't definitive. I'm not some kind of minor trope who's never gonna change that so derivative. I could get up tomorrow, talk to myself real gentle, work in the garden, go out and meet somebody who actually likes me for me, and this time I'll let them. Yeah, I like telling stories, but I don't have to write.
Kind of Girl by Muna, here on Typically Tuesdays, 90.1 FM, CJSF. So, I've talked at length. I feel like I've been pretty, critical and negative on today's show, and it can feel really uncomfortable, right? Because, wow, Leslie, you're telling me about this, woman, and you're just saying these things that she's done. They're horrible. What's going on? Here's the thing. I think, I have people in my life who are transgender. I have people in my life who are ace. I also am a woman and I'm lesbian. And whenever I hear about the ways that J.K. Rowling just has this really narrow idea of women, and she claims that all of this bigotry that she's platforming is for the sake of women, that upsets me. That upsets me as a feminist. That's upsetting to me as a lesbian. It upsets me as a person with people in my life who I care deeply about, and I want them to live good lives. I stopped engaging with J.K. Rowling's garbage rants online many years ago. I blocked her. I also completely dropped Harry Potter from my life several years ago as well, at the encouragement of trans people who they themselves have complicated relationships with the property. But what I heard from them and what I understood from them felt more profound than any nostalgia that I could hold for this property, which was that they were actively being harmed by the rhetoric and huge platform of this unapologetic bigot. J.K. Rowling may be known to most people as a beloved children's novel series author, and she also has millions of followers on the internet who always see the kind of horrible bigotry that she thinks is okay to put out into the world. When I think about how a person like that has access to influence not only children, not only young people, but their parents as well, the adults in the lives of these young readers, and adults in general who maybe are interested in exploring kids' lit, it really concerns me. I mean, I also think that the way that she conceptualizes women is inaccurate and really flattening. Based on what I've seen from what she's written about and what she, like, you know, constantly goes on about, women can only be defined by having been violated, by having been victims of violence. And any woman who has not is essentially not a woman, or any woman who will not fall prey to that is essentially not a woman. I think that's why she feels that transgender women are not women, because she does not believe that gender-based violence can happen to transgender women. I think also that's why she thinks that transgender men are simply confused women, because she thinks that those complicated relationships that trans men must have with masculinity and violence informs why they would want to transition. But obviously, those things, they're not the whole truth, because women, yes, a lot of the times we are subjected to violence. And as I see it anyways, women can also be huge proponents and perpetuators of violence in the way that J.K. Rowling has, in her bigotry, in her insistence on using the state to create these horrible laws around gender. It's just really horrible to think about how this person who has a lot of wealth, very, very wealthy, because of her success of being the author of Harry Potter, and a person with a lot of social and cultural influence, perhaps even has some connections in the political world, is celebrating such bigoted legislation, celebrating legislation that actually doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, there are intersex people as well in the world. How can we say then that a woman is based on biological sex when even biological sex exists on a spectrum? And the thing that, like, I'm so tickled by, but I'm so horrified by, of course, is that her bigotry rests on something so, I'm sorry, I'm going to say this word again, so stupid, right? Like, she was one of the big proponents of of that whole mob of folks who were transvestigating the female boxer Iman Khalif last year during the Olympics. Transvestigating, if you're not aware, it just means people using racist, classist, sizist tropes to try to figure out whether or not somebody who is cisgender actually is transgender. And J.K. Rowling would tweet these really stupid things, like she'd be like, now we're allowing women to get hit in sports, and it's like, Joanne, are we watching the same television program? Like, this is literally female boxing. Like, like, what is she on, bro? And that's the thing, right? Like, it's not even just about the bigotry, but it's also about how illogical these things are, right? This is how far she's willing to go. She's willing to say those stupid things in order to continue to be validated as a bigot. And I think we're really in this time in our world right now, we really have to consider whether or not it's worth continuing to still monetarily and also emotionally invest in people who have huge platforms already and who are very, very, very wealthy. Again, lots of social influence, cultural influence, and possibly even political influence. Is it worth continuing to support their work, right? Life is really hard for transgender people right now. It's really hard for even some queer cisgender people, and it's hard for women in general too, right? I mean, even cisgender women, which conveniently J.K. Rowling has not ever seemed to be concerned about reproductive justice, nor she really seemed to be concerned about pay gap justice and things like that, pay equity, none of those things. But she really wants to use her platform, use her wealth, use her influence to have a slice of the cis heteropatriarchy cake. No matter how you slice it, Joanne, you're not ever going to get the biggest piece, because you too are a person subjugated to cis heteropatriarchy. But she's not going to hear that. She's not going to hear my words. And so that's why I think it's time for us to talk with our dollars. It's time for us to actually divest from Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling. It's time for us to put that investment into actually showing solidarity with trans communities and queer communities and women in general and other marginalized genders. J.K. Rowling's never going to give us that. Harry Potter is never going to give us that. The fact that Harry Potter is made by J.K. Rowling means that it's never going to show support and solidarity to these communities. Its ongoing popularity, its ongoing notoriety, and the growing franchise, it's just going to empower her even more. And if you also have trans loved ones, if you have queer loved ones, if you have loved ones who are women and people of other marginalized genders, I invite you to brainstorm with me and other people into thinking about how we can disempower her and empower the people in our lives who are really, really harmed by her influence and by her bigotry and by her rhetoric. Listen, I think this is where I'm going to end the episode today on Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in. You don't have to agree with me in what I'm saying. Maybe you're also navigating this whole thing in your own way. Maybe you haven't dropped Harry Potter completely, but you are showing support to your trans loved ones and your queer loved ones in your own way. I want to know how you're doing it. So I get an idea of how other people are also coping and figuring this out. Send me a DM over on Instagram. I'm at Typically Tuesdays. You can also contact me through email. I'm typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. And also, I will be sharing further learning and listening and resources and references that I have referred to in today's episode in the episode show notes on the archived show on cjsf.ca whenever this gets uploaded later on in the week. When I say that this has been truly like a long time struggle, like I've been like dealing with these thoughts and feelings for several years, and I know a lot of people have been as well, I could only come to the conclusion that I have come to now thanks to the work of other cultural critics and media critics such as Princess Weeks and also Matt Berenstein and even Natalie Wynn. I'll leave those resources again in the episode description of this episode when it goes out onto the archive later on this week, so check it out if you're interested. All right, tune into more great CJSF programming. If you want something more positive and isn't just like, the world is bad, J.K. Rowling sucks, blah, 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 she's a heinous loser, you can tune into Free Voices, which airs every Thursday during the same time that Typically Tuesdays airs, from 3 to 4. It's all about, like, human personal growth, you know, positivity, human rights. It's a great time. I love Free Voices. You gotta check it out if you want to have a little nugget of, like, just optimism in your day. Free Voices every Thursday from 3 to 4. Thank you so much again for sticking with me during this hour. Here is the final track. This is by Van Con, Rising Star, Icons, Worry Wart, with Red Wine. I've been Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF, and I'll talk to you very soon.